I feel like anyone, you probably have one of these on your phone right now. Anyone who is kind of like business minded wants to start their own business. Everyone has their idea journal. I have mine on Google Docs. And every time I see like some kind of pain point inside of somebody's life, even when I'm working on something, I'm like, oh, I'll jot that down for future. You never know when something's going to be needed. And I look back on that list sometimes and I think like, what was I thinking when I wrote that down? That has got to be like the stupidest thing I've ever read in my life. Like no way that would ever amount to anything. But it's like that concept of just like training your mind to always be looking for those opportunities. Like even if your ideas are going to fail, putting yourself in that place, because once again, you never know what's going to stick on the wall. If you don't show up, then it's never going to work to begin with.
Welcome back to the Intelligent Conversations podcast. Today, I have the honor to learn from Brandon Davis. Brandon is an entrepreneur. He loves business and everything to do with it. He's successfully started three businesses and is currently the CEO of Interval AI. Interval AI is a platform that answers calls, responds to questions, and handles scheduling and track analytics. As you can guess, it is an AI that answers phone calls for a specific customer. This conversation I had with Brandon was fascinating. I, for one, got to learn a lot. For those that don't know, I also love entrepreneurship. And he helped me answer a lot of questions that I personally have had and been struggling with and going into this year looking to work with. But also, he kind of shared some other things that may be beneficial for you as you look to excel in other areas of your life. I don't want to spoil any rest of this show. It was such a fun episode. He's very fun to talk with. And it's also nice to talk with someone that is local in your area. So without further ado, let's welcome Brandon Davis to the show. I'm curious how the competition works. Like just, do they just throw a bunch of companies in and then everyone votes for the favorite?
Yeah, so this competition, I mean, every pitch competition is a little bit different. This was our first one, so I'm not even sure if this is like the standard across the board or if this is pretty rare.
Oh, gotcha.
But this one, there was 200-ish companies, I think around like 220, oh, nice. Somewhere in there, that applied. And then they brought it down to the semifinals where there was 36 left. And then they broke that into six different groups. And then there was a winner from each group that went on to the finals. So we made it to the finals. We ended up placing in the top six. We didn't win the top three, unfortunately, but then we won fan favorite. So
that's awesome. Hey, that's still an accomplishment though, right? Like,
my partner and I were like, sweet. We had no idea what to expect. We had no idea what was going on. We were just happy to be there, honestly.
No, it's entrepreneurship's fun. And it seems like you've been doing that your whole life. How'd you like, just kind of, what was your draw to that? I mean, you kind of alluded a bit in your Podmatch profile.
No, it seriously does stem from exactly that. I was watching ABC Shark Tank since I was really little, and that's where I fell in love with entrepreneurship. It's like my driving force nowadays, which is so fun.
It's fun. I share that interest with you. So did you did like the classic like lemonade stands, all those when you grew up too?
Yeah, it was more like I was always heavy into like service businesses. Mm-hmm. So like when I was really little, like in elementary school and stuff, I'd be like selling random things on the side. I remember I'd always go to like Costco or Smart and Final with my mom, buy a bunch of like candy for like X amount of dollars and then resell it to make a couple bucks profit. But then when I got a little bit older, I started doing like landscaping and stuff that you saw on Podmatch. And that's kind of where like the real love for it turned in.
That's cool. What type of landscaping?
I mean, nothing fancy whatsoever. Just your traditional, like cutting your grass, trimming your hedges, picking up leaves, edging, just like very, very basic stuff. Me and my buddy Dawson, we just went door to door. That was like my first official company that I registered with the state.
And, oh, nice.
We'd straight up just go door to door in our hometown and just be like, our sales pitch was awful. It was, hey, I'm Brandon. This is Dawson. We both go to Hemet High School. We would absolutely love to cut your grass for you or something like that. But I think most of the people probably just had pity on a couple of high school kids wanting to make a couple bucks, but it was a good learning experience for sure.
Oh, I bet. And then you went so I didn't get this. Where did you serve your mission?
So I served in Brazil, but it was during COVID. And so then I finished in Texas. So I had about a year in Brazil, a year in Texas.
Awesome.
Are you LDS also?
No, I'm not, but
you're from Riverton in Utah, so I'm like I figured you kind of were. It's usually a safe bet.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of aware of, you know, the whole culture and stuff, so it's fun. Like, I'm no hard feelings.
Why Utah then?
Oh, I've grown up here like my whole life. So
nice.
Just, yeah, enjoying it here. And that's actually something you're probably not used to. Like, Salt Lake County is actually probably more 50-50 now. And Utah County.
Oh, being like members of the church versus not.
Members of the church, yeah. So it's a little different, like, up here. But not, I mean, same vibe. Everyone knows. It's,
yeah. That's kind of how it is. If you live in Utah, you have to
know. But no, it's cool, though. I mean, I like it because everyone's just, you're nice to each other. You're supportive and
heck yeah,
show up for each other. So it's cool.
Do you ski and stuff? Or ski, snowboard?
I snowboard. So,
snowboard, okay.
Yeah. I actually just went with my brother last week.
Which mountain did you hit?
Brighton.
Brighton, that's, okay.
They're more friendly towards snowboarders.
Yeah, I've never done Brighton before. I've only done Sundance and Park City. Those are the two resorts I've been to. I'm not like super fancy at it though, so.
Oh no, first time you're never, right?
Yeah.
And you kind of just have to have that attitude of you go into and just try dumb things. Like, I can always tell by the end of the day, right? You start doing dumber and dumber things and you're like, all right, maybe it's time to wrap up the day because I'm starting to do stuff that is way outside my skill level.
Too much blind confidence going on or something.
Yeah, something. Right, you start to misjudge what you can actually do. And you're like, all right, I think it's time to go.
I love it. That's so fun. Yeah, I am not a very good skier. I've gone like two seasons now ever since I finished my mission,
fun.
Like moved up here for school and stuff. And so I've been a couple seasons now, but nothing fancy at all.
What was the draw to BYU? Like, just you had a few buddies you knew that were going here or like particular program?
I'm not a huge fan of school to begin with. BYU has an entrepreneurship program. And so that was kind of my way of like, all right, I'll do the college thing, go have that experience and hopefully learn some things, but also be able to focus on like starting my own business. So that was a draw for sure. All my siblings went there. And so it was just kind of like, I never really thought about anything else. I only applied to one other school and they denied me. So the other school, I applied to Stanford and they didn't even like give me an interview or anything. They rejected me flat out. So I said, all right, fine. I'm going to BYU then.
BYU it is. It's still a great school. So, I mean,
oh, it is. And it's so cheap. So cheap.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's a great school.
Yeah.
I found I'm not going to school. I started a window cleaning company. I do that. And yeah, it's fun. Like just the entrepreneurship, but I tend to lean more towards the try and find a better way, like the innovation side of things. I'm curious what part of the business did you find interesting? Because I'll give you a little backstory. I didn't really know what I wanted to do, right? Graduating high school. And I had a mentor say, hey, just start a simple business. Who cares if it goes well? Like, just figure out what part of business you like to begin with. And I found that I kind of like the finding a better way, like that part of it. What would you say is maybe the part you found was your favorite?
What's interesting you say that too, because I 100% agree. I feel like so many people struggle these days. I have so many friends who are on that same exact path that I go to school with, or I've just known for a while that, oh, one day I want to start my own business. One day I want to do this. One day I want to do that. And it drives me nuts because I say, okay, just start it today. Odds are it's going to fail anyways. Like what I'm working on currently, I have so much hope for. I believe it's truly going to succeed. I'm putting all my time and effort and everything into it. But at the end of the day, like, the only reason I think that is because I know I'm working on it and I'm going to push myself to make sure it works. But then at the same time, I've also had four other businesses that have failed since high school that have completely just gone by the wayside that didn't do anything. And so for me, where this journey is exciting right now, working on Interval, which is the AI receptionist for the automotive industry. It's a territory that I've like just started exploring. So it's kind of like uncharted territory for me. I've never worked on a software company before. Like I told you, I've always been, I guess Interval, it's a software as a service, but I've never done it that way. I've always been like a very service oriented, like go and perform something at somebody's house or do something for somebody. And so just this uncharted territory for me is like so fun because every day I go into the office, I'm like, I don't even know what I have to get done today, but I have to do it. And then like mm-hmm. randomly through the day, there's a random task that I have to get done, or there's something that shoots up. And that's like what excites me, because you never know what's happening next. But it's the principle of just getting started and not being afraid to fail.
Yeah, no. And I never really liked the word failure. It's just like you only fail when you stop, which in all honesty, sometimes, right, that is the right thing to do, is just to stop and then pivot, try something else. But honestly, I just say, look, it's a setback and you'll figure something out, a better way, whatever it may be. And you'll find a path forward. But so I'm curious to ask this then. There's times where it just sucks and you don't know the answer. Like, and that's, man, welcome to my life. And you don't really know where it's going to go. And I like how you have this excitement, but maybe how do you, where do you go to look for those right, to try and find maybe those right answers? Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah. Like what direction do you take when you don't know where to go, kind of? I mean, obviously I'm a very religious focused guy, so my easiest answer is always just like pray and try and find direction. I also don't believe God's just going to set out the entire path for you. He's going to make you work for it. So at the same time, as I try and like find guidance through my spiritual means as best as I can, what you already mentioned, finding mentors who have already done something in that space, who have already been through that journey, and asking them. I think I have a lineup of probably 4 to 5, like, people I text on maybe a biweekly basis of like, hey, this is a challenge we're facing right now. Any suggestions? And I do that so I don't like completely exacerbate one of these people inside of my life where they're like, oh my gosh, she is constantly texting me and this is so annoying.
Yeah.
And so I message these various people who I consider strong mentors inside of my life. And I say, hey, this is the direction we're headed right now. This is the latest challenge or issue we've been facing. Any ideas? And it's the most amazing thing, because none of them have done exactly what I'm doing, but they've all done something similar. And so it's, okay, Brandon, here's the advice we give you in this situation. Go try it, figure it out. And a lot of times their advice doesn't even work. It's not practical. It's not exactly what we're looking for, but it's the, just once again, the concept of just trying it out and seeing what sticks. Because at the end of the day, that's how every company is always started. You just kind of like throw something on the wall and see if it sticks. And if it doesn't, you go back to the drawing board. You have the ups and the downs. I like your way of putting failure, because a lot of times failure is totally, totally looked down upon. Nobody ever wants to fail, but failure is like one of the greatest things we can learn to master.
Yeah, no, I agree with the point that, I mean, and it's usually from an outside view as well. Mm-hmm. It's not that, that's actually something that's taken me a lot of work. It's like usually people that are also going through entrepreneurial like endeavors are like, hey, no biggie, like here's what I would do, like you said, they'll give some feedback, some advice that may be helpful. Sometimes it's utterly useless and you got to figure it out, but it's usually the outside view where, you know, parents, friends, and they're like, dude, like I've been telling you this isn't gonna work, and it's almost kind of like they want to be proved right in a way, in some sense. It's like, oh, well, you know, I told you, I tried to warn you. And I find that sometimes it comes from people that, you know, that you care about the most that will say stuff that are like almost discouraging at times. So how do you, I guess, kind of ignore that or maybe offer something better?
I don't know. This may be a personal take. You might be totally different, and everyone listening might be totally different on this, Josh, but I try and embrace it actually. Like as an example, I'm talking with one of my childhood friends yesterday. So besides like running the business and stuff, I am a very people oriented person. Like that's what I pride myself on. I love meeting new people and I love like keeping connections. And so I have kind of a challenge with myself where every single week I either text or call somebody I haven't talked to in a while. Like, so I could keep those good childhood friendships. I could keep those like relationships, these people I've connected with in my life. I don't lose those. And I like make that a pride of mine, just making sure I can always have these connections. But to get to your point, yesterday I was talking to a long childhood friend of mine. He lives out in Hawaii right now with his wife. And as I'm talking with him, I'm trying to explain, he's like asking what's new, asking how everything's going. And then same as you, Josh, he's like, oh yeah, I kind of just saw that you're working on some business. Like, tell me about it. And I gave him kind of the rundown, and he's not like a business centered guy. And so he's like, oh, cool. Like, to me, it's like the most exciting thing in my life right now. And to him, it was just like, cool. Yeah. Like, good luck with that. And it wasn't discouraging because he doesn't fully understand the entire story. And B, where they're coming from when people are questioning what you're working on, when they're questioning if it's actually going to succeed, when you go through those failures and they're like, I told you so. I feel like they truly are, if they're a real friend or family member who actually loves you and cares for you, they're coming from a good place. They don't want to see you fail because that's the exact thing we talked about, Josh. Like, that's the culture we have today where people are afraid of failure. They don't want to see their loved ones fail. They don't want to see their friends fail. And so where they're coming from is a place of love. But little do they know, it's like, at least for me personally, that's like what drives me when somebody's like, oh yeah, good luck with that little venture of yours. I'm like, oh, yeah. You just wait and see.
And I just had a thought. This is something I've been thinking of lately. And it's, I think there's kind of two sets of people. You have your creative, like kind of problem solvers, and then you have kind of your rule followers. Now, both I think are necessary. Your rule followers make sure you don't like go absolutely crazy, because creative people can sometimes, right? We bend the rules a little bit at times. It's like, no, you got to follow this rule. This is how it's done. But creative people, right? We challenge rules and we challenge things, say, well, have you thought about doing it this way? And then, you know, kind of push people outside of maybe originally what they thought was possible. And I mean, you hear the common phrase, 9 out of 10 of businesses fails. I'm like, no, I wouldn't say that. I'd say 9 out of 10 like ideas fail. Like the ideas you put forward, 9 of them are probably not going to work out, but there's usually one that's actually a pretty decent idea. And that's where you maybe need to act on that idea and try and give your whole heart into that. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I agree. I mean, I feel like anyone, you probably have one of these on your phone right now. Anyone who is kind of like business minded, wants to start their own business. Everyone has their idea journal. I have mine on Google Docs. And every time I see like some kind of pain point inside of somebody's life, even when I'm working on something, I'm like, oh, I'll jot that down for future. You never know when something's going to be needed. And I look back on that list sometimes and I think like, what was I thinking when I wrote that down? That has got to be like the stupidest thing I've ever read in my life. Like, no way that would ever amount to anything. But it's like that concept of just like training your mind to always be looking for those opportunities. Like, even if your ideas are going to fail, putting yourself in that place, because once again, you never know what's going to stick on the wall. If you don't show up, then it's never going to work to begin with. So you might as well like put yourself out there and just see what the universe has to give.
Mm-hmm. So on that though, so I mean, I agree, right? That idea list gets pretty long. So how do you, I guess, kind of gauge which ones to like go with? I mean, right, we can try as many times as we want, but sometimes that list starts getting pretty long. How do you kind of choose the best ones that you think have the highest chance at succeeding?
Well, I'll give you a kind of a story here. So when I first started Interval, we've been working on it less than a year now. I think we're about 9 months in or so, give or take. When I first started it with my co-founder, me and him are both in a program at BYU called Sandbox. It's basically you get college credit to work on a software startup, which is like the ideal world for me, because I'm like, all right, I got to do this whole college thing. I already promised and committed myself I was going to do it. So I might as well do it while I'm working on something I love. And so when we first started this program, we had a million ideas and we thought every single one of them was a $1 billion idea that had never been done before, that everyone was going to love it. And we learned very quickly that was not the case. And so one of our first ones that we actually started working on, most of them were just ideas, but when we started actually working on, we called it Lectrify. And to this day, I think it's actually a very good idea. There's a couple that have popped up on the market, but it's super simple. You press record when you're in your college classes and your lectures. It auto transcribes and takes notes for you, so you don't miss anything that the teacher's actually saying. You pay attention in class. It takes notes for you. It creates study guides. Like, it's a pretty cool idea. Like, I talked to a bunch of, like, not even people in my programs. I'd walk around campus. I'd get people to scan QR codes and take surveys. Like, it had great feedback. People really wanted it. We had a waiting list of 75 kids within the first week that we launched it. And so it was going amazing. But the issue we found is it was going to be making $2 a month per user. Just unless we had millions and millions of users, it just is not a feasible business idea. And so then we took it back to the drawing board and we use a lot of the same concepts that we learned in Lectrify to create Interval today. And the reason why we stuck with Interval after starting it is because we started talking to auto repair shops and auto dealerships. We recognized that there was a huge pain point on the amount of customers they miss calls from, and that equates to almost $37,000 a month in revenue lost. And we said, okay, So here's a big chunk of business you're losing simply because you can't answer the phones. What if we had an AI that can answer the phone for you? And ever since then, when we pitch it to people, it's a pretty easy sell because people recognize like, hey, we don't have to answer the phones anymore. We're already missing the calls, so this is going to do it for us.
That's cool. Man, how does that even work? Like the AI phone call, like would the customer recognize that it's an AI or no?
For FCC regulations right now in the US, you have to classify that you're talking to an AI. Okay. There's so many regulations popping up right now because of all the scams that have started since like these voices have got really, really real. Like if anyone has heard like AirCall or anything like that, these voices or 11 Labs, like they sound like a real human and you cannot tell that it's an AI. And so on the introduction of ours, we allow all the businesses who are using it right now to kind of make their own custom greeting. So say it's Josh's Automotive Repair Shop. It'll say, hey, thanks for calling Josh's Automotive Repair. This is, if we have the girl voice on, we usually call it Sarah. And then if it's a guy voice, we call it Benson. Hey, this is Sarah answering the phone for Josh's Auto Repair Shop. I'm powered by AI. How can I help you today? Just a quick little one-liner so people know that it's an AI they're talking to. But then you go on and you talk to it just like you would a normal human receptionist. You schedule appointments. You ask it kind of any questions you would have. And that allows the mechanics and the auto shops to actually keep working on the cars so they could have more customers come into their shop and just keep pumping these out. No more delays, no more stopping work, no more missed calls. It's been quite the experience for them so far and for us, obviously.
It's a good idea. I like that. And yeah, the whole AI space to begin with. I'm curious how you got into that. Like, was it like there were a particular instance? I mean, you kind of said that you kind of got in the whole SaaS space when you just kind of jumped into it because you always liked the service space. But how did you kind of stumble upon that?
Yeah, that's why I brought up Lectrify, because our basis for Lectrify was auto transcription. So it would listen. So if Josh, if you were my professor, you know, I was in a college lecture, I'd hit record and it would listen to you the entire day of the class, the 45 minutes, hour and 15 minutes, depending how long the class is. It would listen and then it would summarize notes. So that same software we used for Lectrify, that, like I said, had great validation. People just weren't willing to pay enough as we needed. We took some of that same software, the auto transcription, and we just put it into phone calls. So now when people call in, it listens rather than just hitting record on your iPhone. It just listens over the phone. Then it transcribes everything, talks to the AI, and then the AI is able to respond back to you because it has to listen and then obviously speak back to you. And so it was that initial failure of Lectrify that we thought was like the coolest idea ever, which I still think is a cool idea. It just doesn't make anything. So we used that initial failure to propel us into what we made next. And there's so many examples of that. You see so many prominent entrepreneurs these days who start like a business that like does not work whatsoever, but the lessons they learn from it end up propelling them to where they're at now.
Yeah, that just you sharing that actually reminded me of Mark Zuckerberg, where he started. Oh my gosh,
it's like the dating where they were like supposed to. Yeah, they're supposed to like rank the girls.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what. Yeah, you're thinking the same thing as me, but kind of that underlying software. He's like, wait, like. I can use this for a social networking site. And then, I mean, now look at Facebook today. It was brilliant, right? And that's the one thing I think I had a guest on a while back, and it's so true. And it's that knowledge compounds and experience compounds as well. It's like, look, your first couple ideas, you're working out a lot of things that maybe you don't even know, right? So like maybe you're developing your sales skills on that first business you start, and maybe they're not so good, right? When you're younger, right, you go knock on that door and it's like, oh, I'm not that great. Or, you know, you try different strategies, but then right, the next business you come into, you already know it works, right? You have experience, knowledge that you can bring to the table, and it just kind of compounds on itself. And I would say as time goes on, the likelihood that you'll start a successful business increases exponentially, but oh, yeah. I could be wrong. No one, I don't know if that's like statistically correct, but who knows?
I mean, it's the experience though. You learn from it and you keep growing. You learn from it, you keep growing. That's life. Life is everything when it comes to this exact same conversation. Like when you go through something, when you go through that breakup, when you go through that tough situation, when you get fired, like these little moments, if you let them just be like the downfall of you and it's all the end of the world when they happen, that's the issue. But if you can like just take them as learning experiences, that's where it's going to really compound your growth and eventually help you do whatever you want. Whatever you want.
So this is a question I had. You kind of mentioned mentors and their advice. So, I mean, I love the strategy because that's something I do too, is you just kind of throw it at the wall and then if it sticks, go with it. But how do you, I guess, kind of look at it and say, okay, this is something that works, this is something that doesn't. So like when a mentor gives advice or someone shares some sort of advice, because this is something I'm guilty of. Sometimes initially I'll hear it and I'm like, I don't believe you. Like, mm-hmm. I want to try this way and I think this way is going to work. But then after, you know, enough, I'm stubborn enough that after enough times someone says that, I'm like, all right, fine, I'll do it. Like, how do you, I guess, find those? When do you stick with your gut and when do you, I guess, take the advice of others?
You know, I don't even know if I'm qualified to answer that question because I'm kind of like you. I kind of like, I'll take in all the advice I can and then workshop it in my own ways. But at the end of the day, I mean, whatever you're working on, it's yours. You understand it to its core, whereas outsiders, even if they're advisors, you know, like these people who really understand your business, like when it's your baby, when you're the one who started it, like you understand it better than anyone. And you understand like the risks you're willing to take, the things, the time you're willing to put in, like the different challenges you're going to face. And so I don't know that I'm perfectly able to answer that question, but I think it's just coming down to the humility of the person and saying like, okay, there's a reason why I asked my mentor or this person for advice. Like, I got to be willing to suck up my pride and say, I'm going to accept it. And who knows, they could be wrong too. It's not like they're perfect in anything.
Yeah.
Unless you, like, I don't even care. You could have Elon Musk as your advisor and he still makes dumb decisions. We see that with what's going on with OpenAI right now.
He
obviously makes some very dumb decisions sometimes, but like, at the end of the day, you got to kind of figure it out for yourself as well.
Thank you. No, that helps. And the only reason I mention that is because, I mean, that's something I've really gone into this year trying to emphasize, is just being more willing to receive help. I've always been the type where it's like, all right, I don't know the answer, I'm going to go figure it out like on my own. And to a degree it helps, but then like there comes a point where it just becomes quite impossible. And so I've come in with more of an emphasis. All right. Like, look, there's other people out there that know a lot more about something. You need to be willing to seek help and kind of like what you said, I guess, suck up your pride and just be willing and come in with humility and say, you know what? I don't know what's going on. But here's a question that I've kind of been, I guess, dealing with. It's like, won't they feel stupid if I go and ask like a question that's dumb or like I should just know the answer to begin with?
I want to throw in a caveat with that question. So okay. Where I'm at right now with Interval, I'm not, as I already mentioned, a big software guy. Like, I use an iPhone because it's very simple and because I don't have to really mess around with it and I don't have to like figure anything out. I'm like the kind of guy, dude, I was setting up a printer the other day and I had to YouTube it because I couldn't figure this thing out. Like, there's so many things inside of my mm-hmm. life where I am dumb with, like I know nothing about and I just kind of got to workshop it. So when we first started Interval, like I said, I'm not a software guy by any means. And so the amount of little topics that my co-founder had to teach me, something that if somebody had been in that space for a little bit would simply laugh at and be like, you think you're going to work on this business and you don't even know that. Like, I had to swallow a big humility pill because he would tell me these things and he'd be like, here, let me explain it. And then he would explain it and I would still be like, I am so lost right now. But then on the same note, when we were at that pitch competition we were talking about at the beginning of the episode, somebody walked up to him and asked him a question. And even afterwards, he looks at me and he goes, I don't even know if I answered that question how he was expecting it. Like, I think we always look at ourselves as if we're the dumbest person in the room, which is probably good because that keeps us humble. But at the same time, we all have to start somewhere. So wherever you're at, Josh, like if you have a dumb question, you think, oh, they already know the answer, this is going to make me look stupid to ask it. So what? If they're a true friend, if they're a true advisor, a true mentor, they're going to help you and they're going to help you grow. Who cares if they make fun of you a little bit? What? You don't know that answer, Josh? Like, it doesn't matter. Like, no, I don't know that answer. Please teach me so I can go on and know this for the future. or if you're just going to sit there blind chasing, it's going to be like that blind squirrel that occasionally finds the nut, but most of the time you're not going to find it if you don't ask those questions.
So this is a follow-up question, and that's, how do you, I guess, ask the right question to begin with? Because sometimes, right, you know that there's something wrong, right? You can look at a business, you can look at something, you're like, I feel like something's wrong here, but you can't quite pinpoint what it is. Mm-hmm. How do you, I guess, find that right question to maybe go ask that advisor, mentor, whatever it may be?
I think it's a lot of you trying to workshop it out first. So it's not like, okay, I just come up, like if something happens inside of my business where I'm like, I have no idea what to do next. It's not like I immediately just start texting people and wait for them to reply. Like I'm putting in the time and effort to try and figure it out for myself as well. And before they even get back to me, like today, I have a meeting with one of my mentors here at 2 o'clock today. And it's something I've been researching for the past 4 months. I put in that time and effort for myself. So when he does give me those answers that I'm seeking, I'll be able to know what follow-up questions to ask him. I'll be able to figure out exactly what I need to hear and be like, well, I already kind of knew that, but what do you think about this? And you can kind of take that conversation a little bit more. If you simply are just waiting for somebody else to give you all the answers in life, you're not going to be able to get it done, because then at that point, they're working on your business. They're working on your personal development. Yeah. They're working on your relationship. Whatever questions you're asking your advisor, your mentor, your influential leader, whatever you're asking, if they're doing all the work and research for you, you're going to always have the questions. You're not going to be able to learn from it.
I like that. No, that's helpful. And that, you know, helps me kind of pinpoint. And it actually alleviates a lot of stress, because sometimes I feel like I need to come in with like all this knowledge, all this stuff beforehand. And it was something like, I actually was talking with a friend recently, and they said, look, the reason why you're coming to them in the first place is to get like some sort of feedback or answer. Like, exactly. You don't need to know everything going into it. And I'm like, that's fair. But I don't know. It's just something in my mind where I sure want to come in prepared to try and answer any questions as we're trying to discover what maybe even the question is to begin with. And yeah, I think that's where real learning occurs, is kind of discovery.
Yeah. But you're not wrong though. Go in with trying to figure out the answers already. Like, go in with that research, but just also be prepared for them to tell you like, no, that's completely wrong, here's why. And like we already mentioned, like sometimes they'll be wrong and you kind of just take it for what it's worth. It's not like just because you ask somebody else, they're always going to have the correct answers. That's not how the world works. Sometimes things aren't going to work. But at the same time, just go in there, try and figure out what you can, but then recognize there's a reason why you're asking them the question to begin with, and just be humble enough to take their answers.
I like that. So how do you go about finding the right people to surround you, like mentors, advisors? But I mean, as you look to grow this company Interval, potentially employees, like how do you look to find the right people?
I think it stems with, you want to find people that are like you, but also diverse from you. So I try and find people. We just hired our first employee about 2 weeks ago. 2.5, 3 weeks ago, somewhere nice. In there. At first, it was just me and my co-founder. We just hired our first outside engineer. And since working with him, we did a couple of interviews and stuff. And he is very different from me and my co-founder. I'm, as you could tell, very extroverted. I'm a people person. I like meeting new people, talking to people. My co-founder, he's kind of like in the middle. He likes doing that kind of stuff, but he could also have his time just to be kind of by himself. This new guy we hired on, super introverted. Like the first couple of weeks, I've been like, we'll just sit at the office sometimes and I'll just like drill him with questions because I know nothing about his life, because he doesn't say anything. I'll ask him about his weekend and it's simple little 1, 2, 3 line responses. And I love him for it because he is so diverse compared to me when it comes to that. Like, we're bitter opposites. But at the same time, even though he's more introverted, he's not like trying to express himself and whatnot, he gets a lot of work done. And that's where we like work hard together. We've been dealing with some issues in the company recently that me and my co-founder, we've been trying to figure out all the how to work around it. And then we brought it up with him, our first employee, and he has an answer and we fixed it yesterday. And we're like, wow, like this guy's hardworking and he puts in the effort. So that's where we are the same, even though we are so diverse. And the same goes for mentors. Like, find the person. This is pretty cliche, and I'm sure you've heard it, Josh. You've probably even talked about it on the podcast, but you want to find that person who's 5 to 10 years in front of you and ask them for advice. You could have your mentors who are a lot older than you, who have been through the ringer, who've done multiple exits, started a lot of successful businesses. Like, you could have those guys in your corner, and that's one of the ones I'm meeting with today. But you could also have those people who are barely in front of you, who knows exactly what it feels like to be where we're at right now in our journey. Like, guys, I was there 5 years ago. I know exactly how you're feeling right now. And trust me, it'll be okay. Like, you need both those in your corner, and you just have to put yourself out there. Find somebody who you think is actually intelligent to share their advice. Find somebody who you think you could work well with. Somebody who will also shoot you straight, though. They're not going to sugarcoat anything. They're actually going to tell you how it is. And then find people who are actually believing you at the same time.
That right there, that last part. Someone that won't sugarcoat it, but also believes in you. That's hard to find, too. Because usually you can find the people, I mean, kind of what we were talking about earlier. Family members and friends, right? They can be some of the source of where they believe in you, but then maybe they will sugarcoat things. But then, right, maybe you'll have some people that you don't even know, and they'll share, right? They won't even sugarcoat anything, and they don't even believe in you to begin with. But finding both, I mean, that, I think that right there is probably the key, but I could be wrong. Who knows? Yeah, awesome. Well, I don't want to take any more of your time, but I mean, we've mentioned Interval and I think your podcast as well. What's the best way for those tuning in here that they can find that, reach out to you, whatever that may be?
Yeah, if you guys check out the podcast, it's called Get Over Yourself. Been doing it for about 2.5 years now. On the podcast description, so if you click the link in the description, it'll take you to like my email, my social media, and whatnot. So if anyone has any questions or wants to reach out, talk some story with me, I'm always open to chat with people, so feel free to click those links over there. But yeah, Get Over Yourself, that's how you can find me.
Awesome. And just a quick brief overview, can you give like a brief description of the podcast?
Yeah, so I started the podcast right after I finished my LDS mission. It's kind of in a weird stage of life. When you dedicate 2 years of your life to try and help other people find Christ and then also just like serve them all you can. When I finished that experience, I was like, okay, I recognize I have to go start my college life. I have to go start my career, like, you know, get some things rolling in my personal life. But at the same time, I was like, I still want a way to serve God's children here on earth. And so I started the podcast. I was praying one day and it just kind of popped into my head. Get Over Yourself is a theory I've lived by for basically my entire life. It started off as a joke when I was younger, where, you know, back in like middle school, when your friends are going through the ringer, there's very few actual trials we have when we're that young. You did bad on a test. Your crush doesn't like you back. You know, like your parents got mad at you that morning. Like, yeah. There's very few trials that a young middle school kid actually has in their day. And so it was kind of a joke I started with my friends. Whenever they were complaining or doing something, I'd say, you're fine. Get over yourself. But it was that same theory I took as a joke when I was way younger that I applied into my life growing up. And I applied in my business every single day now, that when a situation occurs inside of your life, take that as feedback and take that as fuel to continue your journey wherever you're at. So now I started the podcast just as a way to help promote that people don't have to let their self-limitations kind of impose them, and that they can get out of their comfort zone and learn to get over themselves. So that's the message I share on it. It's a fun way to connect with people like you, Josh, and hopefully touch at least one or two lives every episode. That's the goal.
No, it's a great, great podcast. I listened to your last two and they're pretty well done. So like, good
Thanks,
job.
Thanks, man. Appreciate that.
Awesome. Well, thank you for coming on today. I appreciate it. All right, everyone, as you can tell, that is Brandon Davis. He's a very intelligent person, has great things to share. I challenge you guys, if anything spoke to you or if you're interested in learning more about what it is Brandon does, to reach out to him. He gave you some information there that can do that. And also, I would challenge you to check out his podcast. It's a fascinating podcast, and I listened to a few episodes, and it's really well done. I challenge you to do that as well. Stay tuned till next week. We have a great guest lined up for you guys. See you guys next week, and let's get after it. Hey everyone, if you liked this episode and would like to hear more, be sure to hit that subscribe or follow button. We release a new episode every Wednesday for you guys to listen to. Thank you guys so much for the support that you give. We could not have done this without you guys. If you would like to be a potential guest on the show, check out intelligentconvos.com and fill out the form there. Thank you guys again, and let's get after it.